It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
You're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast. And now your hosts, Ben Foulkes and Chad Dundas.
That's right. You're listening to another episode of the Co-Main Event Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm Chad Dundas. That's Ben Foulkes. We're both longtime MMA journalists, and for almost the last 12 years, we've been meeting here every week to break down all the action in the wild, weird, and occasionally wonderful world of mixed martial arts. Ben, how you doing? How's it going this week?
Been through a lot of living.
Yeah, you've been under the weather. You've been under the weather for a while. How are you feeling?
You know, I feel like I am almost back to 100%. You can still hear it in my voice a little bit. But just as I was working on getting my full health back, damn cat nearly died. Had to rush the cat to the emergency vet. You know who is uniquely unappreciative of you spending four figures to save his goddamn life is a cat.
Yeah, he doesn't care.
He, if anything, he's just annoyed at you. He's looking at you like, I can't believe you interrupted my usual routine to save my life and now are forcing pills down my throat. That's a good time, let me tell you. If you have not experienced that, anyone out there in the co-main event listening audience, just always a good time to try to get a cat to take medication, you know?
Yeah. No, they don't. They don't like that, and they don't. They don't understand what they've been through. You know what I mean? He doesn't know. He doesn't know how close to the brink he was, and so instead of gratitude, you get attitude.
That's exactly what you get.
That's right.
Let me tell you though, when I was finally done with the whirlwind, get this. You know, I'm still dealing with a sickness. Get the cat back from the vet. Finish putting my eyes back in my head after seeing the emergency vet bill for the cat. And then get to settle in and watch some Knuckle Mania. You know what I'm saying?
Knuckle Mania 4 went down over the weekend. As you sit here on Monday, do you still have the mania?
I feel like I caught the mania a little bit. It might be because my immune system was weakened by being sick that the mania was able to take hold. But I got to tell you, man, you know, there are worse ways to spend a Saturday night after you feel like you've just been brought to the brink and you're sitting there on your phone watching Knuckle Mania highlights as they filter in. My preferred way to watch fringe combat sports at this point, Twitter videos of somewhere between 30 and 90 seconds. That's it. That's all I need in my life.
I mean, it is a product made to watch on your phone, pretty much. What percentage of the people watching Knuckle Mania think are watching it on their phone? Like 85, 90%?
I'm going to say more people are watching it that way than like on a big screen at Radio City Music Hall, the way you watched UFC 100. I don't know if there's a whole lot of like Knuckle Mania viewing parties, like black tie viewing parties for Knuckle Mania. Sure, if that's what you're getting at. Yeah, but you know what? Especially, people can bring you just the straight good stuff that way. Because people can be like, do you have 90 seconds to watch one dude pummel another dude while holding a fistful of his hair, blatantly grabbing the man's hair with one hand, punching him repeatedly in the face with the other hand, only to then turn around and himself get knocked out moments later? Because that's the kind of thing where I feel like social media is doing its work to curate for me exactly what I need to see from Knuckle Mania 4.
And frankly, most of the featured fights on this card ended so quickly, you could probably watch the whole thing via social media highlight video. That sounds like karma to get knocked out after you got done punching a guy while you're holding his hair. That just sounds like you had it coming. He needed getting knocked out.
Yeah, it does seem like frowned upon I would say, to punch a man while holding him by the hair. And I mean, of course, I might be biased as a guy who is currently growing out his hair. You know, you don't even start to think about it until you see it happen to somebody and you're like, have I created a new liability for myself?
That, yeah.
Do I need to really be sort of newly aware of the possibility that somebody might grab me by my hair and punch me in the face?
Yeah. No, it's that's one of the realities you're going to have to deal with.
You don't have to worry about that. You're over there just pretty closely shorn.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why.
Yeah.
100% the reason why. I'm worried that when I'm out in these streets, you know, that any longer of hair would be a detriment, would be a danger. I'm worried it would be dangerous. That's why I don't have longer hair.
Like the Spartans of old.
Yeah.
You have decided to go with a close crop style just to give your enemies one less thing to grab onto in their desperate, desperate clawing struggle for survival against the juggernaut that is Chad Dundas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dangerous that these hoes might fall in love. Ben, it's it's episode 599 of the Co-Main Event Podcast.
Oh,
did you know that?
Shit.
Yeah.
I knew we were tiptoeing up to 600.
Next week marks episode 600, and that doesn't even count what's going on behind the Patreon paywall. But here we are. It's a UFC 300 style milestone.
I did just hear back from the musical act I booked for episode 600. So they're in. Mm-hmm. That's a good sign. The confetti and champagne shipment did run into some problems at customs. I'm not sure exactly where we're at with that one. Also that there were rumors that it might have been part of a smuggling operation that I was also involved in, but that's neither here nor there. We're going all out for 600, I think is the important thing to note. I mean, listeners will remember when we hit 100 and we had the mariachi band. Do you remember that one?
Yeah. How could I forget?
Yeah. El Diablos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, that was like a decade ago, but
uh-huh.
It feels uh-huh. like yesterday.
Coming up on the 12-year anniversary and episode 600. It's a moment for reflection, I think.
It truly is. Co-Main Event Podcast, 12th anniversary next month, middle of May. Don't worry, we'll tell you all about that. And of course, next week, big episode 600.
I think a way for people to get in on the celebration would be to sign up for our Patreon.
I agree. Remember, you're listening to Co-Main Event Podcast proper, episode 599. This show drops every Monday afternoon for free in your timelines and podcast libraries and has done so almost 600 times. But if you want even more of the Co-Main Event, myself and Ben Foulkes, hit us up over on Patreon. You get loads of extra audio and video content, as well as access to our official Discord message board where they're talking fights and a lot of other stuff 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You know how to do it. Head over to patreon.com/co-main-event and sign up to join the team. Everybody knows by now we're a completely independent podcast. We don't have the backing of a big parent company or even one of the major MMA websites. We're just two guys talking into microphones, and we've been doing it for over a decade. But the truth is, we can only keep making the show with your support. So if you can spare a few dollars in exchange for a little bit more of your attention, please consider signing up to join the Patreon. Ben, we floated this question, or I did anyway, on the Discord a couple months ago, but is the Co-Main Event Podcast the longest continuously running MMA podcast out there? Because we've been doing this for almost a dozen years. And if I'm not mistaken, the longest break we've ever taken was like 9 days. I think that's right. And obviously there's some podcast brands out there that predate the Co-Main Event, but I think all of them have had longer breaks in there, you know, significant breaks where they went away for a while and then came back. So I'm sure if I'm wrong, someone will correct me. I'll get fact checked on this, but if nobody does, I'm just going to start claiming we're the longest continuously running MMA podcast on earth.
I think the continuously running part is super important and also hilarious because it's like we're like one of those old ass pubs in New York, yeah, that's just been open for, where it's just like
they've had the same pot of chili going since World War II.
They don't necessarily claim to be the best. You know, that's not what they're telling you. What they're telling you is that they just haven't closed. Yeah. And yeah, you get to a point, you know, where that means something. You've done it for just long enough. The consistency, the dependability, that is an asset unto itself. And, you know, I think that while we have not significantly improved, we also haven't significantly declined. So all that over the course of 12 damn years in this, like, the co-main event podcast has been going longer than a lot of MMA fighter careers.
Oh yeah. Big time. Way longer. Way longer.
There are people, like, known fighters in the game right now who hadn't even strapped on a pair of gloves when the MMA, when the CME podcast first released its first episode. Like, that's, show me somebody else who can beat that.
I mean, 12 years ago, some of these MMA fighters were like 9 years old.
That's true.
9 and 10 years old. So no, they hadn't started their careers yet. You know, another way you could support the show is by going over to comainevent.com and checking out our merchandise shop. We got t-shirts, we got hats, we got hoodies, we got lots, lots more. Stop by and pick up the best-selling Daddest Man on the Planet coffee mug. Or get a Dundasso t-shirt or hoodie, get a Bobby Knuck shirt, get a Volcamania t-shirt. We got it all. Just go to the website, comainevent.com, and click the link at the top of the page that says shop. As always, we partner with our friends at Superconductor on the shop. They are a brand and design studio from Portland, Oregon. We can't recommend them highly enough for all of your design needs. Hit them up at studiosuperconductor.com or on Instagram at Studio Superconductor. We got music this week from Stockholm-based producer Simeo, aka co-main event podcast listener Alfred Larson. If you like what you hear from him on the show, you can check out more over at soundcloud.com/Simeo. That's S-E-E-M-I-O. Three rounds as usual this week in the co-main event podcast. In round number one, Mike Perry remains the undisputed king of bare knuckle. Conor McGregor wets his beak, and a couple injuries derail the other interesting fights. And in round number two, Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson gets sanctioned as a pro bout in the state of Texas. So in the words of the great poet Flo Rida, it's going down for real, with some notes. And in round number three, it's Jose Aldo fight week, which feels weird to say. It's also Michelle Pereira fight week and Paul Craig fight week. And, oh yeah, the men's flyweight title is on the line as well at UFC 301. All that plus Are You Fucking Kidding Me and Just Saying Stuff. But first, like we always do about this time, let's do a little bit of listener mail.
Listener mail.
You know, I thought I pulled off the Flo Rida thing pretty well.
It was not bad, honestly.
I mean, especially since I had forgotten that was in there, and I had to make an audible. I had to call an audible in the moment as to whether or not I was going to just say it or if I was going to, you know, try to do it some justice. So
and
I don't
just
know.
Just in your brain is just a number of Flo Rida hits.
Yeah, all the time.
Waiting constantly. To be snatched up upon demand.
What's that one about my house? That one's on there. First listener mail this week comes to us from Ryan Cooper, who writes with the subject line, betting on fighters making weight. And then he, in his email, includes a link to an MMA Mania tweet announcing that, in fact, yes, you can now bet on fighters making weight. He writes, as many folks on Twitter are pointing out, this seems ripe for abuse by poorly paid fighters betting against themselves to make weight, betting big against themselves, he says, to make weight, and collecting a nice plus 800 payout. Do you guys think we'll see an increase in small weight misses, or does getting a reputation as an unprofessional weight misser outweigh, see what I did there, a big one-time payout? Most importantly, will we ever see weight-based bets on the $20 you never want to see again segment? Now, of course, he's referring to our ongoing betting segment over on our Patreon account, which is honestly, it's more like a public service announcement about how hard it is to bet on MMA. It's sort of like, don't be like us, be better than us kind of a situation over there.
I like to think of us that we make this shit look difficult.
Yeah, we're trying to keep people on the straight and narrow.
We show you that it's not as easy as you might think to take $20 each week and turn it into sizzler money.
Yeah. Don't bet on MMA. It's sort of what we're saying. Don't do it. So this thing where you could bet on fighters missing weight, I know you're excited about it because you love a weird prop bet.
I do.
I guess as far as the concerns go, I kind of share some of these concerns that this seems like an easy bet for someone to sway one way or another. But I guess I would also add, don't forget, a lot of times if you miss weight, you forfeit a percentage of your purse to the other guy. So you would have that working against your bet. And also, this seems like one of those props where if like big money bets started to come in on Ben Foulkes to miss weight on Saturday for his big welterweight affair, that people are going to notice, right? Like the people who are monitoring these betting sites and betting situations are going to notice any big influx that comes in on a bet as weird and maybe as malleable as a bet that says so-and-so is going to miss weight.
Right. That's the thing that I think people don't realize is that because it's such a weird sort of niche bet, there's not going to be a ton of action on these. And so if out of nowhere somebody's like, I want 10 grand on this dude on the prelims to miss weight, they're going to go, well, that seems like maybe we should look into it more. Especially because when I saw this release, I saw it as something like, what was it, on DraftKings that they're doing it? Like, it's not a thing that's just across the board with every sportsbook offering it. And especially if it's just online sportsbooks where you got to have an account, you got to be signed up and everything, there's a paper trail for them to follow you back and be like, who are you and how did you know to place this bet? And do you know anybody involved in this particular fight? It's going to be really easy to trace. It's not like walking up to the sportsbook at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas with $5,000 in cash and being like, I'm an anonymous person who would like to place this bet there. Because they're not offering that, from what I understand right now. So, like, in many ways, that is one thing that the era of the online sportsbook brings us, is a little less anonymity. So that if you are trying to game the system somehow, you have some insider knowledge, whether it's we have a plan to miss weight and cash in, or whether it's just that you're in this dude's camp and you happen to know the cut ain't going well, you know. You're sitting there in the hotel bathtub, like with the guy telling him like, okay, hey, don't worry, buddy, we're going to make it. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, he's still 6 pounds over. And then you are like, oh, wait, I just got to step into the other room. We'll kick it quick and check my messages. And you pull out your phone and get on DraftKings and place a few bills down on him to miss weight. Like, that's going to send up some alarm bells. People are going to figure that one out, and it's going to get traced back to you pretty quickly. But it is a weird thing to be able to bet on. And yet, once I started to think about it, you could see the appeal. So when some repeat offenders maybe show up in there, next time Kayla Harrison fights, even if she hasn't missed weight at the, you know, even if she showed up, made the weight, and looked good in the fight against Holly Holm, or she is known on this show, Holly Holmes, at UFC 300, you know, if that prop bet is still available next time she fights, there'll be some people who hit it just because they'll figure like, hey, maybe. What, you know, a few people where they're, man, next time Manel Cape or one of these guys who has a history shows up there, people will be like, $5 I don't want to see again. Because some of it is like plus 600 odds or something you might get on somebody to miss weight.
Yeah, yeah.
Or if somebody is seen walking around looking not great, the day or two before. I mean, obviously the odds are going to be affected because the odds maker is going to keep an eye on that too. But rumors going around where it's like, saw this guy out having the tiramisu on Thursday night. What do you guys think? You know, yeah. I could see people, I could see, especially the true degenerates, I could see them getting into this.
Yeah, I know it's going to be attractive to you, speaking of true degenerates. All right, we got two emails, several emails actually on this topic. So I'm going to read these two from Christian Rader and David Lotteray, which say, this one from Christian Rader says, justice has finally been done in the BJJ community. No longer must brown belts at regional competitions live in fear that they might find themselves competing against Mighty Mouse. Demetrius Johnson has finally been awarded his black belt. Guess he finally got that butterfly guard down. And then David E. Lotteray writes, pour one out for the pound-for-pound greatest brown belt of the modern jiu-jitsu era. Demetrius Johnson is officially good at as good at grappling as the UFC light heavyweight champion. Matt Hume must have gone soft, whether it's deserved or not. Congrats to Mighty Mouse. Now, this is a thing we had talked about a couple weeks ago, that Demetrius Johnson was showing up at international Brazilian jiu-jitsu competitions at a high level, competing at a high level. Let's not act like he was going down to the YMCA for an open tournament on the weekends. But he's competing in the Masters division, which means he's a gentleman of a certain age. And he's also competing in the brown belt division, which I think both of us had to squint at a little bit. And I had to think, wait, is this the same guy that we saw throw another human up in the air and then armbar him on the way down in a goddamn UFC title fight? And he's still running around with a brown belt? You fucking kidding me? Apparently, the situation has been righted. Matt Hume out there in Seattle has given Demetrius Johnson his Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt.
I don't know if it was Matt Hume, right? Wasn't it? It was somebody else who was like his specialized jiu-jitsu coach. I can't remember exactly who it was, but yeah, gave him. Do you think that he finally became the leader in the gym that they were looking for him to be? Is that what it is?
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe they'd been holding out that he needed to, he needed to check a few more boxes, needed to get his DARS needed some work. And he finally put that together, and now he's a black belt. So good for him. Good for Demetrius Johnson. It's, you know what? It's just nice to see him accomplish something, isn't it?
Yeah.
Something he can hang his hat on. Something finally he's been in the game so long. It's nice to see him get an accolade.
Yeah. Nice that he can have something to tell his family about, post on Facebook about, something to lift the old spirits. Also something that'll make the entire brown belt community be like, okay, game back on, you guys. Like, next tournament, I'll see you all there. Now we're really going to figure out. Now that we get the sandbagging Mighty Mouse out of the division, now we're really going to figure out who the best brown belt in the world is. Because we all know he wasn't one.
Next message this week came to us from Darkwing Duck, who writes, it sounds like we have two UFC makeup artists to thank. For Christy Arnault, is it Arnault or Arnault? I don't know. Making UFC history over the weekend after Arnault first told the UFC she didn't feel comfortable stepping in for Joe Martinez as ring announcer. She got a, quote, pep talk from the makeup artist who convinced her to do it. My questions for you, gentlemen. First, what's the wildest thing a makeup artist has ever talked you into doing? And second, what kind of illness do you think could have sidelined Joe for only two fights since he returned later in the night?
Well, it was something affecting his voice, right? That's what she said afterwards.
Had a frog in his throat.
His voice was giving out. So maybe, especially if all right, I got to save it up for the main event or whatever. You get yourself some tea with honey, a little lemon in there.
Yep. Yeah. I'm assuming hangover. Right. Joe Martinez just so hungover, couldn't do the whole day. Had to go get a drink of liquid IV real quick, and then he came back and was able to finish up.
Was out there in the nightclubs going hard. and paid the price the next day. Yeah, I don't think it was that. He seems like a consummate professional.
Yeah, I agree.
The thing that the idea that like she had to be talked into it by a makeup artist and somebody saying like, okay, hey, we need you, we need you to get in there and do it. Reminds me, honestly, one of the coolest things that I saw when I was first starting out in the world of combat sports was when I worked for the IFL and we had, I can't remember who it was. It was somebody actually legit famous who was going to sing the national anthem before one of our events in like Atlanta. And for the record, having someone sing the national anthem before the event was not something we did. It was not something we ever did. It was just, we were going to do it for that one, I think, as an excuse to get this famous person, I wish I could remember who it was, to sing. And we were also filming some sort of reality show at the time. And that person felt like they were too famous to show up for a sound check of the national anthem, which, fair. Like, I feel like it was a fair decision for them to make at that point. But then it was somebody in the production team was essentially like, okay, she didn't show up for the sound check, she's out. Like, and instead, they got just the woman who was like our like executive of like marketing, who honestly had a singing background, has like, an amateur person who was good at singing and had done like some singing stuff. And they were just like, you can sing, right? Get up there and sing the national anthem. Now, see, to me, that is impressive because she wasn't planning on doing anything in front of the public that night. This person at least is a backstage reporter, so already, you know, you're on camera, you're already in a position where you were going to talk into a microphone while a bunch of people looked at you. So now we're just talking into a microphone saying different stuff while a bunch more people look at you. It's not that big a leap. I could see how we got there. You know, I would wonder if I'm Joe Martinez, if I might be looking at a Lou Gehrig, Wally Pipp situation. Because you take a back step, you sit down, let somebody else have your spot one day. What if they absolutely crush it? What if they go on to have the longest consecutive performance streak in that space and you just are like, well, shit, shouldn't have gone hard in the nightclub last night. Mm-hmm. I believe that is what happened to Wally Pipp, actually. I believe he was hungover.
I mean, it's not like it was WrestleMania 3. It's not like there was 96,000 looking in on you doing the announcing.
Pontiac Silverdome.
You're at the apex.
Yeah,
there's like true. Five guys in easy chairs, somebody escorting the family of the fighters who just fought out of the arena and escorting families for the next fight into the arena. So I don't know. It seems like, you know what? And she did a great job. I thought she did well.
This should have been you giving the pep talk. Because you would have been like, hey, first of all, don't worry about it. Nobody's watching this shit anyway. This is a really low wattage UFC fight night event. And it's on the same night as Knucklemania 4. Don't even worry about it. Nobody's paying attention. Go out there and do whatever, frankly. It's not going to matter.
Next all question. Right,
this week. See you out there.
Next question this week comes to us from Dockers David. Yes, I think that's the kind of pants he likes to wear. Dockers David. Bad news for pirates everywhere. He writes, Brian Barberina has been cut by the UFC. Obviously, the shores of BKFC is the best place for the swashbuckling buccaneer to wash up, right? Or would you have him sail into the bay of PFL and try to plunder the $1 million from one of their tournaments? I am so sorry for this email. I will hang up and listen. So yeah, everyone's favorite.
Why would you apologize for this email? Why?
Maybe because of all the pirate metaphors. I'm not sure.
You've listened to this show. Obviously, we would enjoy that. Yeah. Obviously.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it is true. Brian Barberina announced over the weekend that he is no longer with the UFC. I'm saying I agree with Dockers David here. Love to see the guy in PFL, right? I believe he was already talking about the potential of him going over there and swinging them things with Mike Perry, which, of course, is what everyone wants to do over there in the BKFC. But, you know, since one of BKFC's main marketing strategies is to sign MMA fighters that we know who are also, known strikers, is to put those guys in there and try to lure in the MMA fans. So I think Brian Barberina might well be a nice addition to the roster. Now, if I was him and I thought maybe I could go get that $1 million, I might think about that, but at the same time, as a fan, I'd like to see him in the BKFC. I'd like to be watching him on my phone in the BKFC.
First of all, it feels borderline irresponsible for us to encourage anyone to do bare knuckle boxing.
That's true. That is true.
You see how it goes over there. It seems like we should really have guilty consciences for encouraging that. That said, however, I would probably rather see him do that, especially if he looks at what the BKFC seems to be paying. We got to look at their payouts with the California Commission this time around. Looks like pretty good money over there. With the PFL, it's like, yeah, you could get that $1 million if you win all those fights. You could also go over there and run into a series of Magomeds, and none of that should happen for you at all. So I don't know. I think, especially for a guy who has an exciting style and a marketable kind of personality and look that he could lean into and that he could have a chance to show off a little more, BKFC might be the better spot for him. But it's also the kind of thing where, like, if you don't already want to go over there and throw those bare-fisted bungalows, don't be talked into it. By the money or the what you think of as the career opportunity. Like, you have to actually want to do that shit because it's too insane otherwise.
Yeah. I agree. All right, last question this week comes to us from Elliot, who writes, longtime listener, first time firing an email in. Thanks, Elliot. Like to hear from you. He writes, with the announcement of UFC 304 in Manchester and subsequently the prelims starting at 11 p.m. and main event circa 3 a.m., I was wondering if that's the norm for overseas events to cater for the U.S. audience, and more broadly, what's your take on it? For what it's worth, I won't be sacrificing my sleep schedule for it. At the tender age of 29, a late start like that, and I'd be out of action for a week. You know, it depends on the event, right? We've seen it kind of go both ways. We've seen them put on events in essentially prime time in the local location of the event. We've also seen them move them so they'll be in prime time here in America. And it might just be a scheduling issue. It might be where the event is and exactly when it would air in America if we did that. But yeah, it seems like it moves around in terms of start time as far as I can recollect.
Yeah, and honestly, like, I kind of like when they, depending on what the start time is, but like when they start at like a reasonable local time, and if it's like an afternoon event here, I'm fine with that every once in a while. Like, I think that's fun.
Yeah.
And especially if it's a fight card that we actually do want to watch, you know, to be able to watch it sort of like early afternoon. I'm sure that just suppresses pay-per-view numbers, and it's also probably a thing where you don't get to just unilaterally make the decision. It's up to ESPN and everybody else. But like, I don't know. It does seem like you're asking a lot, even of the shit-eating wild people, to be like, come to our event where the main event will be at 5 o'clock in the damn morning. You're also kind of asking for a certain type of trouble, are you not?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, staying up all night, probably having a couple few soda pops, right?
The lads might meet up for a couple pints before the thing even starts, because they're trying to kill some time. You know, they might roll up in there already feeling a little jazzed up, and then it's not like they're gonna stop. Once they get in the arena, they're gonna order a bunch of $16 Modelos or whatever it is, however many pounds they charge for a Modelo over there in England. I don't know, but yeah, I could see how if you end up throwing the bungalows in the crowd, you might look at it and be like, well, you know what, in retrospect, we should have been able to see this one coming.
Yeah, turn the lads out into the street at 5 o'clock in the morning. You could be asking for one. All right, that's going to do it for listener mail this week. If you have a question, comment, or concern you want to air to the podcast in future weeks, you know how to do it. You go to the website, comainevent.com, and click the link at the top right-hand corner of the screen that says email the podcast. That'll get you in touch with us. As for right now, we're going to go ahead and get started with round number one. Well, Ben, in the world of combat sports, there are moments that last a lifetime. This is one of those moments. So said ring announcer Jeff Houston just before the Mike Perry-Tiago Alves main event at BKFC 4. And I don't know. I mean, I know he was speaking metaphorically. Also, there are moments that last a lifetime. Does that really mean what he thinks it means? Or does that just make it seem like it's taken a long time?
I think there are moments that live on in our memories for a lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that he's imagining a scenario, obviously, where somebody is on their deathbed many years from now, life kind of flashing before their eyes. You know, the births of children, major life events, Knucklemania 4, you know, the biggies, the important shit.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what didn't last a lifetime. Any of the last six fights on the BKFC Knucklemania 4 card, because none of them went over 2 minutes. And that included Mike Perry's main event TKO victory over Tiago Alves, which was stopped at 1 minute exactly. And Mike Perry reigns supreme in the world of bare knuckle. He moves his record to 5-0. Over there in bare knuckle boxing. We have talked a lot about Mike Perry's departure from the UFC, his entry into bare knuckle fighting, and how he has sort of seemingly against all odds transformed himself into an interesting commodity in combat sports as maybe the best bare knuckle fighter that we've got, which is, you know, 10 years ago was not much of a thing you could say. But here we got Mike Perry. He's living his best life over there in BKFC, I guess you could say.
He's living his best life and kind of getting paid a pretty good chunk of change to do it. Did you see this? The payouts that were released by the California Commission, especially it's helpful, I think, to California kind of remains like the one commission at this point that has any sort of transparency with what's going on. The rest of them, it's sort of like, you know, the UFC is like, hey, we would like it if you told people as little as possible about how our business runs. And they say, sure, anything you say, boss. And California Commission is sort of the one that is not doing it. And the side-by-side, I saw this from Andy Hickey on Twitter, where he puts the side-by-side fighter payouts from UFC 298, which is the last UFC event in California where we got to see payouts, you know, where you had Alexander Volkanovski and Ilya Topuria side-by-side with Knuckle Mania 4. And here you had, for one thing, a whole bunch of people on flat fees and not the show win money. So BKFC is already doing that part better than the UFC has. And Mike Perry got paid a flat fee of $600,000 to do this fight, which is more than Ilya Topuria made to win the UFC featherweight title. You know, and that's, of course, without bonuses that the UFC, discretionary bonuses that the UFC might factor in. But that also, that has, I think, acted in recent years as just sort of a black box where we could all say, like, anytime anybody's worried about fighter payment, well, you don't actually know. They might have gotten $8 million just gifted to them in their mailbox. And sure, I guess they might have. Then again, they might not have gotten anything. Yeah. But, you know, Ilya Topuria made $350,000 with a $50,000 win bonus. So $400,000 to go out there and win a title fight. If you are one of these people who is sort of finding the end of your time with the UFC, or maybe just the end of a current contract, and if you're crazy enough to want to do bare knuckle in the first place, you might look at some of those payouts and be like, well, maybe who knows how long that's going to last over there if they're paying that kind of money out. But while they are, I wouldn't mind going and dipping my bread in some of that gravy while it's still hot.
Yeah. I mean, Thiago Alves, that's basically what he said. He was sitting at home in Florida coaching people at American Top Team. He says Bare Knuckle FC called him up, made him an offer he couldn't refuse. He came in there, had a few fights, and then he loses to Mike Perry on Saturday night and immediately announces he's going back into retirement. So a short stint there for Thiago Alves. And I don't know, maybe doing it right. Maybe you get in there, you collect a few paychecks, you get out before your face gets too cut up.
I mean, Grant, he's going back into retirement $200,000 richer.
Yeah, which is what he made
it. Now, it does deserve to be said here that when you look at the payouts side by side, it does sort of drop off a cliff because you got some top people up there making six figures. Ben Rothwell, flat fee of $150,000. Your guy Lorenzo Hunt made $100,000. Todd Duffy got $85,000. And then you go all the way down there to where there's a whole bunch of people making $6,000, $5,000, one person making $500 down there at the bottom, which $500 for a bare knuckle boxing match, Chad, maybe in 1887 when that was a whole lot of money.
Yeah.
But damn, that is not much considering the considerable risks. And the UFC, on the other hand, you know, you look at their payouts, they don't have anybody making less than 10 and 10. Yet, when you look at it as a percentage of revenue, I would be stunned if the BKFC is a profitable operation at this point.
Yeah, it's kind of apples to oranges in terms of what they're paying right. People, right? Like, the UFC pay apologists will always come out and be like, well, in other sports or in boxing, whatever, it's only the top guys get paid these big amounts. But in the UFC, you know, the lower tier guys get paid more than they would in boxing. And while that might be true, you're talking about a business that every year now reports over $1 billion in revenue, which that ain't what's happening over at BKFC. I can guarantee you. So we're, you know, it's all relative, let's say, in terms of what everybody gets paid. And to the naked eye, it would appear you know, probably the fighters in BKFC are getting a larger share of the revenue for sure than they are in the UFC.
You could imagine an alternate universe where somebody like Mike Perry just hangs around in the UFC though, right? And never even sniffs this amount of money
right.
per fight.
Yeah.
And he goes over there in bare knuckle, which is apparently the art form that he was born to do. Just the, when he came out of the womb, the gods were like, here is a bare knuckle boxer. He just doesn't know it yet. And God, if he's born 20 years earlier, maybe never gets a chance to find out. But right here at this current moment, Mike Perry goes over there, ends up being like the best bare knuckle boxer in the world, making a ton of money to do it, is sort of a marquee attraction for BKFC at this point. Now, I won't say it's completely stunning, because if you did force me to look at the UFC roster of a few years ago and be like, who among these people do you think could become a star for bare knuckle boxing? I don't think it would have been shocking to anybody that Mike Perry could be on that list. So he seems like somebody who was probably already interested in some bare knuckle boxing.
No, that part's not shocking, but I feel like it is kind of shocking to reckon with the idea that we must now sit here and think to ourselves, the two guys who arguably had the, or have had in recent memory, the best post-UFC careers are Francis Ngannou and Mike Perry. I don't know if that was going to be the pairing we were going to be talking about, but here we are saying it in all honesty, and you know, good for Mike. Although I will still say, as I said last week on the Power Hour over on the Patreon page, I don't know how long the arc over here is in BKFC. I don't know if this is one you can ride for years and years, or if it's a relatively short candle burns twice as bright type situation for Mike Perry in bare knuckle boxing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. Nobody should plan on a long career in bare knuckle boxing, either because it would be bad for you, or because the company might not be around for a long arc. So anybody thinking about bare knuckle boxing, it should be a short-term situation. Should be a short-term part of your bigger financial planning picture. I mentioned this email we got on the subject of Knucklemania 4 from Molly Melling, where she writes, here I was ready to shit all over Todd Duffy for bailing partway through his fight with Ben Rothwell when Lorenzo Hunt fell and wrecked his elbow. Did the floor really win two out of the three big fights at Knucklemania 4?
I mean, it was... If this had happened in the UFC, we'd be talking about how it was a disaster, right? But again, we're dealing with a sliding scale here. I don't know exactly what we expect from Knucklemania 4. Seems like less of a detriment the fact that Lorenzo Hunt got knocked down in his heavyweight title fight against Mick Terrell and dislocated his elbow, and then in a very strange fight between Ben Rothwell and Todd Duffy. Duffy ends up, I think, having what was described on the broadcast as a stinger in his shoulder, and he ends up basically dropping out of the fight just 43 seconds in. So yeah, a couple of freak occurrences in those last couple fights that probably turned down the enthusiasm. Maybe those last few fights didn't quite live up to it, but yeah, very strange, especially in the Todd Duffy. At least with Lorenzo Hunt, you could be like, yeah, that dude's elbow is fucked up.
Yes, yeah. That reminded me of that Nogueira one where he got his arm broken by Frank Mir, because it's just like, when you see the way the guy is holding his arm, and then even the way he is looking at his own arm as if it is a foreign subject, and you're just like, yep, that is fucked up, bro. We can all see that. We can all see this fight's over. The Todd Duffy one was weirder, especially because I was just like, I watched that, like, the entire fight. I watched it several times. Didn't take me that long, honestly, because it's so short. And I couldn't be sure if Ben Rothwell ever landed a clean punch on him. I can't be sure if he ever got hit.
And definitely the second time that Duffy went down, with the final time of the fight, it didn't appear that a punch landed to me.
Well, and if it's a stinger, and if we're thinking the same thing, like that means the same thing as what I think it means to me, because I remember getting stingers playing like high school football, and you get stingers like from wrestling, where if you're shooting in and you get sort of like jammed in the right spot, like that nerve. But it also is a pretty short term thing. Like if you got a stinger in your shoulder, I understand like it kind of renders your arm useless there for a little bit, but it will pass pretty quickly. And he didn't want to, like, maybe get up and take a chance that, like, you could get through it. I mean, granted, you're asking a guy to then stand up with one arm against fucking Ben Rothwell, who is a terrifying individual,
yeah,
especially in bare knuckle boxing. You know, Ben Rothwell got scarier when he decided to just let the body hair go. Like, that he got more terrifying by a factor of 10 when he's out there with just hair grown out of his deltoids.
Yeah.
And to stand there across from that guy in the small-ass BKFC ring with only one working arm while you wait for the other one to come back, I get it. That's a lot to ask. But it is also just, like, a major downer to see this fight where we were watching it, waiting for this one to actually be made and come to fruition. Two big, meaty men slapping meat, and a guy falls down and is just like, nope, I'm done, kind of right away. And you're going like, well, that was a bummer.
Yeah. Let's talk briefly about the entrance of Conor McGregor into BKFC ownership. We got this one from the Jesse White Deer, who wrote, with Connie Mack becoming co-owner of BKFC, when can we expect to see him leap from his thrones of discarded Proper 12 bottles to challenge whatever rando bare knucklehead happens to be standing in the ring? Best wishes and warm regards, your pal from Oklahoma, the Jesse White Deer. So, I'm not going to say that it was a surprise to see Conor McGregor come in as now allegedly a part owner of BKFC. We had seen him show up at one of their events earlier, climb in the ring, get in the face of Mike Perry. We know Mike Perry has been talking about how he would like to fight Conor McGregor in a bare knuckle boxing match for a while.
Of course he would.
McGregor, again, the longer we go in the career and life of Conor McGregor, I think we are left to assume that he will fight in some combat sports competition until he dies, right? Like, if Conor McGregor lives to be 60 years old, he will be fighting someone in a bare knuckle boxing match at the Dublin County Fairgrounds, we can be assured. So it's not a surprise, I don't think, to me to really see him take this role or enter into the BKFC ownership group. But it was, let's say, unexpected over the weekend. We didn't know that that necessarily was going to be announced or that that would happen. Dave Feldman, the president or CEO, whatever he is, of Bare Knuckle FC, addressed it at the post-fight press conference, basically saying he could imagine maybe Dana White wouldn't be thrilled to have his biggest draw now be on the side of Bare Knuckle FC, promoting Bare Knuckle FC, talking about non-UFC combat sports, and but followed it up by saying, I don't think Dana's worried about us. And then a little quip at the end, at least not yet. So yeah, interesting stuff with Conor McGregor coming on board with BKFC, at least in a financial way.
How much money do you think you have to show up with in a briefcase? Slide it across the table. Let David Feldman flip it around, click it open. Like, are we talking huge amounts of money to buy into BKFC, to buy a chunk of BKFC at this point?
For Conor McGregor, he's probably like, I will send one tweet.
And he's just like, I'll let you ride on my yacht. I'll let you take the water safety course for free. And, you know, I'll take what I was going to bring to the strip club tonight. I'll give it to you. And what do you say? I own a piece of this now.
I mean, however much money it was, it seems like it's probably a good thing for BKFC, right?
I mean, it's a good thing for BKFC just to have his name in there.
Yeah.
Because especially you look at the way BKFC is going, like, as much as we got excited to talk about some knuckle mania, it's like, it still hasn't risen to the point where people are going, yes, I will pay for BKFC pay-per-views to actually watch this shit. I can't wait to go somewhere and buy a ticket. Destination sort of event that I'm going. People are not there. They're still on the, this is a weird curiosity in the combat sports space. And like us, I think a lot of people are just sort of feeling like, well, it's not going to be around forever.
Yeah.
The way things are going, but we'll enjoy it while it is. And to get Conor McGregor to show up and be like, I'm part owner now, I'm in this thing, it gives you like a veneer of legitimacy that you could really use, frankly.
Yeah. And then, yeah, stability as well, maybe. I guess, I don't know. We'll see if it goes on to mean anything. We'll see. All right, let's go ahead and we will do Are You Fucking Kidding Me? And then we will move on to round number two. Ben, speaking of events that generate money and finances and economics here in combat sports. Jorge Masvidal is out here this week, quote unquote, revealing that he got paid $5 million to fight Kamaru Usman on short notice at UFC 251. You will remember, I believe this was a Fight Island joint where basically, in his own words, Jorge Masvidal had to come in and quote unquote save the event to fight Kamaru Usman. He says, his quote here is that he says, "We ended up selling right under 1.3 million pay-per-views. If I hadn't struck that deal with the UFC, I wouldn't have got nowhere near 5 million. I would have just felt like I got taken advantage of. So part of me, the business side of me, was very much satisfied, but the guy that always wanted that world title belt wasn't." To which I say, are you fucking kidding me? I know that $5 million sounds like a lot to anybody who is not Conor McGregor. It sounds like you got paid a lot of money. I'm sure Jorge Masvidal was pleased to get paid $5 million to fight Kamaru Usman. But you just have to do a little math. You just have to do a tiny bit of math. Go back in time. Recall that at UFC 251, the price of a pay-per-view was $64.99. Times that by 1.3 million. Now, I know we're not coming up with an exact figure here. Nobody gets to keep all the money. There are some fees that needed to be paid. There are some expenses that need to be paid. But if you just do that math, UFC 251 would generate $84,487,000 in revenue. So $5 million? Maybe not a ton of that, let's just say. Now, juxtapose that with boxing, where Luke Thomas had a tweet earlier that one of the big boxing matches did way fewer buys than this, at least in America, and each guy got paid $25 million. So, I don't know, man. I know that $5 million was good for Jorge, but maybe, are you fucking kidding me? That sounds like maybe you did kind of get taken advantage of.
Are you fucking kidding me? I'm surprised to hear that it did 1.3 million buys, honestly. That's pretty good. This week, Meyer, are you fucking kidding me? So, Alex Perez went out there and got himself a pretty big win in the main event of this UFC fight night that rates so lowly in the current combat sports news cycle that we really didn't even really need to talk about it this week. But afterwards, you know, he's very excited. He was on a 3-fight losing streak, as we noted last week. Lost to all good guys, but still probably felt like he really needed a win. And afterwards, was talking about how this finish will help him out when it comes to taking shit from his friends. Here's his quote. "All my friends always call me Pillow Hands. So now they can't call me that anymore. My buddy was calling me ASP, Alex Sleeping Pill Perez. Not because I was putting people to sleep, but because I was putting him to sleep every time he would commentate my fights because I was taking people down. So it just shows I am evolving. It showed off tonight, and we're going to keep working and go from there." Are you fucking kidding me, Alex? I don't know if these people are really your friends, man. They need to be hyping you up out here calling you Pillow Hand. You don't have to take that, Alex.
Yeah.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Fucking kidding me? That does seem like a one-way relationship. He might want to reevaluate some of his relationships.
Do you think when they were watching this, when they heard him say that, that they're standing around the living room and they all kind of like look at each other and they're like, they sort of reach a silent agreement where they're like, we have to do better as Alex's friends. We have to show up better for Alex. Like, guys, this is on us.
Yeah,
we didn't realize it until right now, until we heard him say it on TV and shit. But like, come on, guys. What are we doing? He's our friend.
Yeah, I'm sure there was a lot of soul searching going on in the Alex Perez friend group after this one. In any case, that's going to do it for round number one. We'll be right back with round number two.
Chad, according to Jake Paul, issuing a tweet today where he says, Mike Tyson wanted it to be a pro fight. Netflix wanted it to be a pro fight. So I agreed to make it a pro fight. Winner takes all. And then he posts a picture of the Jake Paul Mike Tyson fight poster, and now in big red letters is added, sanctioned as pro fight, which don't it just say something?
Yeah.
That you have to put that on the poster.
Mm-hmm. That tells you what kind of matchup you're dealing with when the fact that it is going to be a real professional boxing match is one of the big selling points. That tells you a lot about the product that you're trying to pitch.
Also, a little misleading here for him to say, I agreed to make it a pro fight. I mean, I don't think Jake Paul was ever the thing we expected to be an impediment to making this a pro fight. It was the Texas Commission, the Texas Department of Licensing and Regulation, which, you know, should probably understandably have some concerns about a 58-year-old Mike Tyson getting in the ring here. So Eric McGrocken, the big homie over there, he reaches out to the Texas Commission right away to sort of get some confirmation of this. He writes, breaking news, Texas approved Mike Tyson versus Jake Paul as a pro fight, sort of. I just confirmed with the commission the actual rules. They wrote, quote, we opted to approve a professional bout with certain waivers. 8-round contest, 2-minute rounds, 14-ounce gloves. Which is kind of like saying, look, we know this is not a great idea. We understand that. And yet also, like, how do we sit there and be like, these guys are going to have an exhibition fight in Cowboys Stadium live on Netflix? Doesn't that seem ridiculous? Like, you probably feel like you're in a situation where you let them just be like, okay, fine, we're having an exhibition. Nothing you can say about it. We'll just choose our own rules. And they go, well, do we look like we're just completely unnecessary here? Let's go ahead, approve it as a pro fight, but with our own stipulations we get to add. And yet it also reminds you how deeply unserious combat sports can feel at times, where it's just sort of like, pick your own rule set. You know, it'd be like, hey, we're going to bring out some NFL players who like retired 20 years ago, get them out there. Don't worry, it's going to be okay, though. We're making a rule that you can't hit them in the head, and each quarter is only going to be 6 minutes long. And, you know, like, we're just kind of making it up. Just making it up as we go. Like, what seems less likely to result in Mike Tyson's cardiac arrest at Cowboy Stadium live on TV? Like, yeah. Let's go with that.
I hope Jake Paul doesn't actually mean winner take all.
No, I don't think he does. Nobody. I think that's one of those phrases people are just throwing around, and they don't realize that it used to be a real thing in boxing. Like, that used to be how it worked, that the loser did not take home any money. Because I feel pretty confident saying both these guys stand to make a substantial amount of money.
Yeah. We've been talking about this basically since the announcement that this fight, I think, you know, maybe for obvious reasons, has been getting a lot of mainstream cultural attention. I know a lot of people who don't otherwise converse with me about combat sports related topics have been talking about Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson. I've seen a lot of social media posts from people who are outside the bubble talking about Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson. And frankly, this is what Jake Paul has done through his entire boxing career, is picked out a beloved figure from the past and invite them into a boxing match and then make everyone sad when he beats them. And he's done it very well. He's played his part masterfully throughout this whole thing and essentially built himself into a going concern, a commodity, a saleable commodity in the boxing universe. And so I think you got to hand it to him for that. Now, one of the things that I think we had all been thinking about this fight all along was that it was going to be some kind of exhibition, right? We were thinking, well, they're not going to let him fight a 60-year-old man in a real boxing match, even if it is Mike Tyson. But lo and behold, here we go, apparently having a real fight where we assume these guys can try to knock each other out. Does that make this contest more appealing to you, Ben Folks? And do you think it gives Mike Tyson a much better chance to win?
I would think that the 14-ounce gloves works against Mike Tyson. Because, you know, don't you think that what Mike Tyson brings to the table here is one punch power?
Yeah.
If you can get in there. And Jake Paul is not dumb. He knows that. He knows the thing you ought to do here is stay away from Mike Tyson. That he can still do that. He can still swat. What you have is speed and youth and probably cardio on the guy. And that's what you have to use. He's almost 60 years old, Chad.
Yeah, but those him hitting the pads, man, he's still got it.
It's
still
not 1991. And it never will be 1991 again. Everybody needs to accept that. You're not at home on the couch looking up from your copy of Nintendo Power to watch that version of Mike Tyson. It's time, and the ravages of age come for us all. And Jake Paul's whole shtick, you're right, is doing exactly this. And yet doing it in these ways where there's still enough of a where people are going, but maybe I could see how he loses this one. He's got to fuck around and end up on the wrong side of these one sooner or later, right? Like maybe yeah. Mike Tyson. And that's what he's selling you. He's selling you where you go like, okay, Jake Paul is some fucking Disney kid influencer. He's not serious. Mike Tyson is Mike Tyson, like a terrifying individual. And you forget about the passage of time. That's what's happening here.
Yeah. And I just think, and I think that there are a lot of people who are expecting Mike Tyson to win this. And maybe the fact now that we are having an actual professional fight, in my opinion, does give him a little bit better of a chance of catching Jake Paul with some of his power punches. But at the same time, I agree with you. I think people should be prepared for that not to happen. I think we should build a wall around our hearts. And I think that there are a lot of mainstream people who don't understand the concept of building a wall around their hearts yet.
Yeah.
Because they have not been burned by the cruelty of combat sports again and again and again, as we have. They haven't learned those hard lessons yet. And I feel like maybe they will. I feel like maybe they will learn those hard lessons in this fight, but maybe not. Maybe Mike Tyson will pull one out of his back pocket and knock Jake Paul out.
It's gonna work on the rubes for sure. And look, whatever we may say, whatever we may have already said, whatever we may be saying now, whatever we may say in the future, there's not a chance in hell I'm going to miss this.
Yeah, of course not. Of course we're going to watch it, especially since it's on Netflix.
Yeah.
That's one of the genius parts here. Probably the most genius part that if you have a Netflix subscription, you will be able, is my understanding, to just watch Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson.
Yeah, you'll be on there on a Saturday anyway, watching Moneyball for the 14th time. And then you'll be like, oh shit, Jake Paul, Mike Tyson's about to start. I've already got the app open. Let me go over there. Like it's going to work. It's absolutely going to work. And credit to Jake Paul for like, just when we think, okay, his current trajectory, the shtick, the whole gimmick he's running on people is about to finally run out of gas and people are sick of it and they're over it. He finds a new way to put a little extra twist on it and reel you back in. He's done it pretty consistently. The only way he ever fucks this up is by trying to have a normal boxing career. When he goes and just fights a boxer, and especially fights a boxer where it's just sort of like record-wise, it kind of makes sense for him to fight that person. When he just tries to have a normal boxing fight, that is the least interested people are. Weird shit only. That should be like just taped on the wall. They should paint it on the walls of Jake Paul's gym. WSO, Chad. Weird shit only.
I agree with you. Yeah. And then we'll get some weird shit when these guys have their fight, I guess. All right. That's going to do it for round number two. We'll be right back with round number three. Well, Ben, we're going down to Rio, UFC 301 at the Farmacy Arena, granddaddy of them all, down there in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, headlined by the flyweight title fight, men's champion Alexander Pantoja against Steve Usyk. And in the co-main event, Jonathan Martinez versus Jose Aldo, Anthony Smith versus Vitor Petrino, Michel Pereira and Ihor Pateria, and Paul Craig versus Chao Barallo. Going to round out the main card there. I feel like the both the co-main event and the main event of this pay-per-view are a guy versus... Wait, who? And obviously, you think about it for a minute, and Steve Ersig and Jonathan Martinez are guys that we know. We know those guys, but at the same time, when you first hear it, it's kind of like, oh, Jose Aldo, oh, Pantoja against... Wait, who?
Yeah, this one, the Steve Ersig one seems like a little bit rushed, right? Because he seemed like, you're looking at him, you're like, okay, I could see this guy being on a path to fighting for a title, but it also seemed like we got to a point where we were like, we don't know what else to do. You know, we want to have a Pantoja title fight in Brazil versus TBD. That's what we had on the calendar. And look around to see who's available. A fight maybe that, like, ideally, that we haven't already done. Okay, this guy, he has a few wins that he's stacked together. Throw him in there. Even if it seems like maybe might not be ready, either in terms of like the quality of competition and experience, or that people might not have really had a chance to learn who he is. And I think this one, it definitely feels like partly a UFC 300 hangover is what's going on here, because we just had an amazing event full of so many big names. And then you have two more big events coming up in June, where you got 302 with Dustin Poirier and Islam Makhachev. Then you got 303 at the end of the month, Conor McGregor and Michael Chandler. So you got a bunch of big fights lined up for those. And in between there, you got Bobby Knuckles and Khamzat Chimaev doing it in Saudi Arabia. So, like, you got a bunch of big fights coming up. You just had a big fight in the middle. There's got to be something that sort of feels like it's swimming in the wake a little bit. And it feels like a fight card that's sort of regionally tailored, where, okay, we're going down to Brazil, we're doing that thing again. We kind of a market that we sort of moved away from, where we used to have an intense focus on, and we'll round up some local guys for this stuff. It just feels like probably going to be one of the least watched pay-per-views, at least to this point in the year, you'd have to think.
Yeah, this one has a real UFC 301 vibe to it. It's 301. So that's what we're getting here down there in Brazil. Steve Ersig, just three fights into his UFC career. He's 10-1 overall as a pro. Oh, excuse me, 12-1 overall as a pro, but had not fought outside of Australia before 2023 when he signed with the UFC and had his debut at UFC 289. Obviously, he's won all those in the UFC. He's got two performance of the night bonuses, especially that most recent one against Matt Schnell was one where he looked fun to watch and dangerous and ended up winning by second round KO. So he made an impressive performance there. But he's still only the 10th ranked men's flyweight, according to the UFC's official rankings. Number 10 on the list, which makes it seem like this is a bit of a reach to by their own metrics to push him in there. But it's possible that he will make for an exciting fight with Pantoja. Steve Ersig's middle name is Vincenzo, which, if you got the opportunity to be Vincenzo Ersig instead of Steve, I think you got to take it. I think you got to be Vincenzo Ersig or Vinny Ersig. You know, it's just somebody's going to remember. They're going to remember you. Yeah. Your name's Vincenzo.
What if we just went with Chenzo?
Whatever, man.
Or Enzo Ersig, bro.
I mean, that's got a nice ring to it, right?
You going to fight Enzo Ersig in Rio? Shh. Pack a lunch, brother. You know?
Yeah. No, I agree.
E squared? Enzo Ersig coming out after you? Bring your legs with you.
Yeah, no, you're doing a lot of work there on his behalf.
I'm trying. So, also, Wikipedia tells me that his nickname is Astro Boy.
Yep. That's also correct.
So,
Astro Boy Enzo Ersig. Has a nice ring to it. Yeah. Has a nice ring to it.
Hell yeah.
All right, co-main event, Jose Aldo returns. He is 37 years old. We have not seen him since August of 2022. He lost the unanimous decision to Merab Dwalishvili at UFC 278. Previous to that, he had put three wins in a row together. He comes out of retirement now to fight Jonathan Martinez. I think this was one where he was supposed to fight somebody else, and then it just didn't work out, so now he gets Jonathan Martinez. But this is a weird one to me, man. This is a weird fight for Jose Aldo to take after being on the shelf for those years to come in and fight Martinez, who is on a hell of a run. He's won six fights in a row in the UFC. He's 19-4 overall. He's got numerous performance of the night bonuses to his credit. He has been in the UFC since 2018, so it's not as though he just arrived on the scene. But, man, if you're Jose Aldo, aside from scratching the itch and getting paid some money, I don't know what you get out of this, man. I don't know why this is the fight you choose to come back for.
Well, maybe the clue here is in that we are thinking of this the wrong way, in that this is the fight he is choosing to come back for. In many ways, he's never really left, Chad. He retired like a year and a half ago, and since then has had like three boxing matches. Like, one of them was an exhibition, and then two pro boxing matches. It's not like this guy ever stopped fighting. He's been more active as just like combat sports athlete as a fighter than a lot of UFC dudes in their prime. So it's like, it's not like he needed some encouragement to get him off the couch, get him back in shape, and get him to consider a life of fighting again. He never stopped. This is kind of retirement in name only.
Do you think this is a situation where he wants to get through his UFC contract? He feels like maybe there would be bigger and more lucrative things for him happening in boxing if he wasn't still involved in a UFC contract. I guess that could be an issue here.
I mean, it hasn't stopped him from doing boxing stuff, clearly. So, I don't know. I just think that, like, the guy who retires from the UFC and starts doing a bunch of boxing matches is the guy who quit drinking except for Saturdays and also is a bartender. You know, like, he didn't really give it up. So, I don't think that it's really like Jose Aldo was ever looking for just the right opportunity to come back. I mean, I'm sure like fighting in Rio and everything is cool for him, but it's like he never stopped fighting. So it classic MMA retirement stuff at work.
What else are you interested in on the main card here? As I said at the top of the show, Michel Pereira on it, Anthony Smith on it, Paul Craig on it. So, you know, maybe not the upper echelon in terms of competition here, but some guys that we like to watch fight at least.
Yeah, you know, I'm always going to be interested at a Michel Pereira fight. Him and his team, those guys only move to music. You know that. I don't have to tell you that. Mm-hmm. Also always going to be interested when Paul Craig fights. Really looking forward to seeing him lose for 2.5 rounds and then jump a triangle in the final 20 seconds and win this shit. And then give a charming yet mostly unintelligible interview afterwards. Like, that's what I'm looking forward to every time he fights. I got to say, I'm curious to see about this fight for Anthony Smith. Just because I feel like he's a guy. I'm talking to Anthony Smith later this week, actually. And I'll be curious to hear his thoughts on this. Because it seems like he's a guy right now who's on this kind of weird precipice where his career as a guy who talks about this sport on camera and on podcasts and all that stuff would seem to be have a more promising future for him right now. He goes into this one against Vitor Petrino as a huge underdog. He's like a 4-1 underdog in this fight and is out there still talking about the fight that he would like to have and thinks is a realistic possibility against Alex Pereira. And yet it seems like you have another option here and he's still very much committed to this option. And yet it doesn't seem, when you look at like, when you think how the UFC thinks and try to ask yourself what was going through their heads when they put this fight together, it doesn't seem like they're thinking like this will really be a huge rebound to get Anthony Smith back in the title conversation. That doesn't seem like what they were thinking here, you know, sending him down to Rio for this one.
So you don't think they were thinking showcase fight for Anthony Smith to send him to Rio de Janeiro to fight the undefeated 26-year-old Brazilian here? You don't think that was what they were thinking?
Get
Anthony Smith back in the game?
I do not, Chad. I do not think that that was the internal thought process. And I also think that Anthony Smith, he's clearly a smart guy who's been around this sport a long time and has seen it from, you know, both just his, not only his own career, but as a sort of ongoing observer and commentator on the sport. He knows. He's seen this before with other people, so he definitely knows that that's what they're thinking. Now, he probably also is telling himself, like, hey, Dustin Poirier told them, you want me out here fighting these young guys, huh? You know, and prove that he wasn't anybody's stepping stone yet, so why can't I go out there and do it? And maybe he can. But it also, it has to be going through your mind at this point if you're Anthony Smith, right?
You'd think, and the good thing about Anthony Smith when you talk to him is that you stand a good chance finding out.
Yeah.
Anthony Smith is one of these guys who might actually tell you. He might actually have some thoughtful comments to say to you when you talk to him. All right, let's do Just Saying Stuff, and then we'll get out of here for this week. Ben, what is your Just Saying Stuff?
Well, Chad, I'm going to read you what can only be described as a real meeting of the minds that happened over on Twitter.com here recently. April 26th, Sean Strickland tweets, "Therapy is the enemy of men."
Oh, boy.
Example, let's say your wife gets raped. This is just pleasant examples that we're just going with. We're just jumping to right away. Just sitting around of an afternoon thinking fun thoughts. The only right answer is murder. But what does the system say? Call the cops. He will go to jail for a few years. If you're sad, take pills, talk to a therapist. Violence is wrong. Therapy, anti-masculinity. This, by the way, has 18,000 likes. Now, Jake Shields going to get up in there in the replies, Chad.
Oh, man. Oh, why are you doing this to us? Why are you doing this to us?
Because I hate all of you, apparently. Jake Shields replies, "Therapy is for women and gays."
Oh, my God.
Sean Strickland replies, "Facts." Chad, I'm just saying, you're not going to go to therapy, bro. No way. No way. That is for weak people. Therapy. No, you are going to sit in the front seat of your car, make a series of Instagram videos where you talk about your feelings and the difficulty you are having processing them. You're not going to go talk to a mental health professional who actually might be able to help you sort through some of this stuff and come out on the other side stronger and better. Hell no, bro. That is for women and gays. You are not going to talk to some one single confident, trained, you know, in the confidentiality of their office mental health professional. No! You are going to talk to many strangers on social media about your feelings like a real man. I'm just saying, Sean, bro, you are already doing a half-assed version of therapy. You're just doing it on Twitter and Instagram where no one can actually help you. You're doing it. You're doing the thing. You don't realize that you're doing it. You clearly want to do the thing. You clearly want to talk about your feelings because you're doing it constantly. You're just not doing it in any helpful way. And is that the part that you think sucks? Is that somebody actually might help you? Like, that's the part that you can't stand the thought of? I'm just saying, bro, you're already doing it. You're already talking about your feelings a lot. Maybe talking about it with just one person who is listening and, you know, trained to help wouldn't be so bad. Wouldn't be such a negative change. I'm just saying.
Just saying. Wow. Didn't know that was coming. Man, the big homie Jarzino Rosenstrike was on the MMA Hour this week and talking about where he is at in his career. He has been on a win one, lose one trajectory since about 2019. He knocked out Alistair Overeem in the very last few seconds of their fight. And he's ever since then, he's been around 500, a little bit under 500 actually, but he's coming in off this, this big win over Shamil Gaziev from back in March. So Ariel Helwani asked him what his future plans were, and Jarzino Rosenstrike essentially says here he's going to revitalize his career by going back to his homeland of Suriname and getting in touch with his, quote, real power source. Here's what he says. That's my real power source. Going back to Suriname, lay down in the river, get my power. In Suriname, we like to be reconnect with culture. Go into the river, lay grounding with the earth, stuff like that. I feel like I was losing my power, navigating my true self, which brought me to this higher level. I feel I need to gain that again. Take some rest, get away from everything, go into the jungle, lay down in the river. That's one of the main things. Grounding and connecting with the earth. That's one of the main things I used to do. It brings me relaxation. It brings me everything. It makes me feel relaxed in everything and also in my personal life. I haven't done it in a while, and I feel like my soul is asking for that. So this week, I'm just saying, why not? Yes, let's do that. We've already got guys channeling the power of stones of the earth.
Yeah.
Right? We got Diego Sanchez harnessing the power of a storm. We had the big homie, Manny Newton, back in the old days with his deja vus and his coincidences. Why not?
Yanni Blackjacks with the suicide rope?
Yes. Hell yes. You got guys out here pretending to be samurai. Why not? Let's have Jarzino Rosenstrike go back to Suriname, lay down in the river, which seems like a big part of this, which
yeah, okay, you have, several times.
You have my attention. I'm interested in laying down in this river in order to gain power. And then, you know, bring him back and make a run at the title after we lay down in the river. I'm just saying. Why not? Let's do it.
Who needs 6 months of sprawl training when you can go lay down in the river?
This isn't the weirdest thing we've heard of.
Oh, no.
In this sport,
no,
laying down in the river, getting in touch with the earth. Sure. Yes, I'm on board. Let's do that.
People you don't want to fight, Chad? C-level Kane, motivated BJ Penn, flower shorts Max Holloway, reconnected with his Surinamese power, Jarzino Rosenstrike.
Just got out of the river, Jarzino Rosenstrike. You do not want to fight that man.
Still smelling like river mud. And just coming saying. To knock your head off.
Just saying. All right, that's going to do it this week for the Co-Main Event Podcast. Thanks everybody for listening. Don't forget we're over on the Patreon page all week. Patreon.com/co-main-event. We'll see you guys over there, or we'll talk to you again next Monday on the proper. As for right now, thanks for listening, everybody. We are done. We are through. We are out.
You know, now that I think about it, though, I got to say, our houses are separated by a river. There's a river in between our homes. What if we meet in a river and we lay down?
I mean, we're heading into the 12th anniversary here. Maybe we need to recharge our power, get back to the earth, reconnect. Man, it's not a bad idea. I'm not hating it as an idea.
We might want to wait a couple of
months. Yeah.
We're going to warm up, let the river level go down a little bit.
I'm going to set a reminder on my phone for August.
August 1st, I'm laying down in the river.
Then we'll look into it.
Put it on the books.